Excuse me, I noticed these guys shoved me to the front, so I guess I'll have to start. But anyway, my name's Herb Hosaffel, and I operate a commercial Black Angus cow-calf operation, which my mother actually, when she was going to school here at Davis in, I believe, 1938, imported some of the first Black Angus cows into California out of Canada. And that was the last cow our operation ever purchased. So we've had a reasonably closed herd all these years. But I artificially breed all the cattle, heifers, cows, on both ranches here in Oregon. I probably burn through 1,100 or 1,200 straws every year. As the gentleman from Florida talked about the economics of AI and selection criteria and fertility, my number one selection criteria is fertility. So in my operation, if you don't breed first draw, first service, you go live somewhere else. So what I do is I've used almost all the variations of synchronization. I started AIing heifers in 1971, which was a dismal event. It wasn't too successful. Then I AI'd cows, and my dad would always point out that the worst calves we got came from my AI deal. So the first bull I used, I just remember his name. I think he was called Canadian Colossal, and he was from Canada, and he looked really pretty in the picture. And, of course, back then there was no EPDs. There was nothing. So anyway, we had ampules and thawed in ice water instead of warm water back then. So then I went in and out of it for years, and then I went to a bull sale in the late 70s, I think, maybe early 80s, and I'd been AIing off and on in between time, and I went to purchase a bull. And Dad always said, you got to buy the best bulls or you can't make any genetic gains. So I bid and I bid and I bid on this bull, and this bull got up over $10,000 or $11,000, and I just couldn't go any more money. The bull's name was Tehama X-Ray. He was a Scotch cap son. So that gives you an indication where I was at. So Bill Bohr created a monster on that day. I was so mad. Dad and I drove home without the bull I wanted, and I told Dad, screw Bill Bohr. I'm gonna breed a thousand cows to Scotch cap, and I'll raise my own darn bulls. So anyway, Bill Bohr is the one that created the AI monster. I love doing it. I don't understand why the whole world doesn't do it, especially on heifers. There's lots of operations that obviously cannot do a cow program because of the way they run an outside country. But I always say, if you're not AIing at least your heifers today, you're either stupid or lazy. There's only two reasons not to AI. With all the genetic improvement, and all the EPDs, and all the predictability in everything you do, there's just absolutely no reason that I can think of not to do it. And people talk about the time and the effort, but in a synchronized program, I've got a rule. A cow goes down a chute, nothing you do to a cow should take over a minute. So you figure it's 3 or 4 minutes a cow. I don't care which program you use. So time-wise, it's no big deal. It doesn't take a big crew. I use children and grandchildren, and they're actually very cheap. I think the biggest concern I have, though, in AI is conception rate, and I'm not talking the conception rate on my cows. I'm talking about the conception rate caused by the quality of the semen I get or purchase, and the predictability of the conception rate on those bulls. I've done tests where we randomly bred 500 cows, 100 cows to five sires, and the range of conception rate was 38 to 70%. So that's when I learned, or thought I learned, that all bulls are not created equal in life. And then I kind of fell in love with Dr. Roy Axe from Arizona on his protein binding ability of sperm, which people didn't believe or did believe, but I was looking for anything to, or a test to do anything to prove the fertility. I take my hat off to Gen X with their new preg check in their catalog now. That's very beneficial. In fact, the only thing wrong with the program is they haven't tested all the bulls, so I can make the best decision on more bulls that have a higher degree of accuracy in conception rate. So anybody starting out AIing that has not AIed, I really encourage you to check with whomever you buy your semen from to try to get them to tell you the conception rate. And trust me, they know the good ones and the bad ones. So you need to get that information, and then they'll help be responsible if your conception rate is not as good as you thought it should be. So with that, I'll let Mr. Hall, or I'm sorry, Doug.
Thank you. A little loud there, I guess. My name is Doug Worthington. I'm a general manager of Vintage Angus Ranch in Modesto, California. It's a purebred Angus operation. We have two annual sales a year, a bull sale and a female sale. I guess applying to this group, we do sell semen, and we do have bulls and bull studs, and that's not always my top grade of which is the best bull, which one goes to the bull stud. But we do have bulls there, and we do supply bulls throughout California and other states. People purchase, and our donor cows, females, go throughout the United States. I think we had sold into 34 states last year with the females, and we sell a lot of embryos. I think one of the reasons they asked me to come was to talk about putting in our embryos and how we work that, because the majority of our calves come from embryo calves. We flush cows every 21 days during breeding season. We actually start before breeding season and do a flush and freeze. And then come around the 1st of April, we're in with the first what I would call fresh flush, or flush that can be transferred. And a lot of times we'll bring frozen eggs out of the off-season into that flush and put in a mixture of frozen and fresh. We tend to flush about 10, 12 cows at a time every 21 days. That's about what we can do in a day comfortably and get the embryos in. We like to do it every 21 days because we like to take the natural heats off of the cows that do not take an embryo and reuse them. I don't suggest that unless you trust the people checking your cows for heat. But we don't reshoot them or anything, so the tech will tell me if we're wrong come day to put an embryo in them. Hasn't happened very often. He's passed on a couple head. Of course, it's a little young for him to preg check them, but we passed on a couple, and they ended up not being pregnant. So I have a very good crew, does a very good job, very diligent. And this maximizes our recip usage. We're kind of running probably on the high side for preg rates for a national average. We tend to do somewhere between 65 and 72%. That's a mixture of frozen and fresh embryos. But like everybody's talked to all day long, it's all about the details to get that kind of rate. You have to do everything right, the nutrition, vitamin. We'll bleed cows. We'll see where their nutrient levels are. We'll do in the recip herd and in the donor herd. We'll do everything possible to make sure we're maximizing our efforts and the money spent. And we calve about 450, about 350 spring and about 100 falls. A few less falls here lately because of the dry weather. I'm rolling over my springs in my fall heifers into my spring program and breeding them for them because I just don't have the dry ground to run them on or the water for them to drink at the Hill Ranch during that time of year. So it's changing and hopefully change back pretty soon. Gonna get some rain. I guess on the donors side, you know, the advancement in our ET program I think is really sped up. I think we're tying it in with DNA, using the DNA and using the being able to select the females out of the herd that do certain traits better and matching up with the sire's DNA and using that whole system to help us out has really made gains. Been able to push the average of our sale bulls into the top 3%. Of the for dollar beef, 3% for dollar weaning, you know, just all of your weight traits and carcass traits are all less than in the top 10% of the breeds, some 7, some 6. That's our main goal, is to breed a balanced set of genetics, not particularly picking out one index or one trait to concentrate on. I particularly would like to sell cattle that, you know, pushed the 10, 12 most important traits in the top, into the top 1 or 2 percentiles of the business. And you know, I think that's a lot, pretty lofty goal, but I think it's doable. We're getting there pretty fast. We also sell a lot of embryos. I know if you do the math, you say, well, they flush every 21 days. That's too many embryos for 450 calves, and it is. So we sell quite a few embryos, different countries, and mostly here in the United States, though. And it's been a good business model for us to justify the cost of expense of running that kind of program. Just from a standpoint of drugs and cycling and keep cycling, and we're doing it all the time, every 21 days. And I think the key to running a program like that, like I said before, is attention to the details. And if we heard earlier about breeding a cow, you know, what time to breed a cow, when she in heat, she's going to be in heat at night. I don't have one of them fancy systems. I might have to look into the price of one, so I can. My brother, which does all the donor work, would really appreciate it, because my brother usually on flush days doesn't leave to go home to eat until around 8 o'clock. He's back around 11 to check. He's back around 2 to 3 in the morning to check, and then he's back out there at 5 to 6 in the morning to do the day's work. And he wants to know when those donors in heat, and we breed them accordingly. So if they need to be bred at 2 in the morning, we're breeding them at 2 in the morning. And we average last year 11 viable embryos per flush per cow. Some are zero, just like Larry just said. Some are not. But you're not going to get that kind of fertilization, that kind of viable embryo count, if you leave anything to chance. Everything has to be accounted for. So that's a little bit about what we do, and I look forward to your questions later, but I'll turn it over to Mike.
Thanks, Doug. And most importantly, I'd like to thank Allison and the committee for inviting me here today to be on this panel. A little bit of correction on the program. I'm not with Cal Poly anymore. I retired in 2012 after teaching there for 4 decades, and I would like to thank the committee or this organization for putting these programs on and all the work that you've done, because I was a recipient of that. I brought that information to the classes. Of course, I taught it in the classes, but more importantly, I took it in the field with our students. And I felt really proud of our students that each and every year we bred probably close to 400 head. Either we AI'd them or we put embryos in them, and we use the practices that your committee did in some of the synchronization, the technology. I remember still the first ester synchronization program that Daryl Strobing put out. I was the first one to sign up for it. And again, thank you and continue your fine work. But today, I'm kind of the oddball here in that I'm going to talk about what we do at Wolf Cattle, and that's, I kind of represent them on the West Coast here. This is my retirement job, and it's something I really enjoy and one that I feel very proud of, and I feel like that we're doing something good for the industry. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Wolf Cattle, but more importantly, what we're doing with the dairy industry and the importance of that to the beef industry. And kind of wrap that up, and hopefully it kind of create some interest and some questions and stuff from you. But I was on the limousine board for 6 years, and that's where I met Jerry Wolf. And the Wolf organization, they were one of the first adopters of limousine cattle, and Leonard Wolf was a commercial producer, and he was one of the people that adopted limousines because he felt the cutability of the cattle was superior to all the other breeds. and he fed the cattle, and so they have been breeding cattle or limousine cattle, feeding cattle since the 70s. They have their annual bull sale every year. They're the largest North American, our largest limousine breeder in North America. This year they sold 350 bulls at their annual sale in March. Average price of $8,200, and sold bulls into 36 states and three Canadian provinces. And their neighbor is the Fair family, and this is Riverview Farms, and Gary Fair is the CEO of the Riverview Farms, and they milk 60,000 cows in Minnesota and South Dakota. And here recently they added operations in Arizona and New Mexico. And half of those cows were Jersey cows. And if you've ever been around Jerseys and see the value of a Jersey bull calf, virtually it's worth nothing. And he was tired of giving these calves away. And so he turned to his good friend, Jerry Wolf, and also Dr. Dwayne Wolf, and that's Jerry's younger brother. And Dr. Wolf was the meat specialist at South Dakota State at the time, and it was always his idea that the Jersey would be the perfect complement to the limousine. And we all know that the limousine, of course, are noted for their carcass cutability, their large ribeye areas, but also their high dressing percents. And that's where the deficiencies of a lot of the dairy cattle, and especially the Jerseys, lied in. And so in 2010, they mated the first limousines to the Jerseys. And Mitch Fair, Gary's son, is in charge of all the dairy operations. And he said, if we have any calving problems, it's over with right there. So after the first 3,000 births, they found that there was no calving problems. They had 98.9% unassisted births, average birth weight 79 pounds on Jersey cows. And so that was a success, and also the conception rate was higher than normal. And what they were targeting is the problem breeders. So they were using sex semen. So, again, we thank the work that's done in the reproduction area to develop sex semen that can be used on Jersey cows very effectively and also on heifers. So we can produce our replacement heifers, and at that time we don't need any more of the heifer population. So then we can, after the third, fourth, and fifth service, they would use limousine semen. And those would all, of course, be all terminal calves, and all would be harvested. And so that the first calves were processed in 2012 and at Tyson Foods in Dakota City. And, of course, Tyson was very skeptical at the time, but they were just thoroughly elated. And ever since then, they've been just thoroughly thrilled with the product. And this is, again, over 4,000 or 5,000 cattle harvested a day with over 90% choice and high percent yield grade twos. And so, again, it's been a perfect cross and has really kind of created a lot of enthusiasm. And after the first year, Gen X, that was the first adopter of the semen companies that had this program, they were awarded one of the top 10 innovative awards in the dairy industry at Madison, Wisconsin. And so now we're working on the Holsteins, and I think it's going to have to be a little bit different because on the Jerseys, we grow them up on a silage-based diet, and then we harvest them at 1,400 pounds on the steers and 13 on the heifers, and again, with a very, very superior carcass, and the performance of the cattle is very superior also and very similar to a lot of our beef cattle. And so basically we're turning a dairy animal into a beef animal. And we try to do this as natural as we can. We try not to implant the cattle or give them any beta agonists. And I know with Holsteins, you know, we did some of the first work at Cal Poly using Zilmax on Holsteins. And we can turn a Holstein into a beef animal with Zilmax and aggressive implants. And, of course, Zilmax is no longer. And so now I think that we have to kind of look to ways that we can do it genetically, and we can do that with a superior beef breed that is very complementary to the Jersey and also with the Holstein. And again, why is this important? If you all know, all of you know that our cattle population is suffering. We have right about 90 million head of beef, or total cows and calves today, and that includes dairy cattle. Our beef cow population is at 30 million. It's grown 3% this year, but we really struggled to grow it. And all it takes is another drought in Texas and Oklahoma. We know what that experience is in California. We dropped per cow herd in California to 30 or to a little over 500,000 head. And so we can use the dairy population here in California, you know, at 1.8 million to raise a very superior beef animal that can meet our consumer needs. And probably many of you heard that Tyson Foods has announced closing their packing plant in Denison, Iowa. And, of course, it really threw the futures market into a tizzy this past week. So we don't need any other packers go out. And so I think we need to capture more of the females and being able to utilize their uterus from a beef bull. And again, using the technology of sex semen and also genomic testing, I think I've kind of targeted some of those dairy herds here in California and have good reception. So they can breed their best cows for the replacements and breed their inferior cows. And so we're kind of being able to take the leftovers to make a superior beef animal. Thank you.
So we can open up for questions that folks might have for the panel. As they're bringing the first person a microphone, maybe I'll open up with the first question for, it's kind of like Jeopardy, whoever can push the button first gets to answer the question. So we talked a lot today about the pitfalls that you can run into on the breeding programs like this and problems that you might run into. My question for whoever can push the button fastest on the panel is, what problems or concerns or things in that order do you see that folks who haven't started the program might voice to you that it would actually turn out to be myth?
I think there's kind of a myth about how difficult it is, and there's a lot of good technicians out there. I've got several that work with me or for me at times. A couple of them are in this room, and if you figure out, I've always said, if you just give that kid the price of one bull, he'll camp at your house for the whole month and breed cows and heat detect for you. So there's lots of people that'll help you. And the facilities, when I started out, trust me, my facilities were horrible. And the handling wasn't as good as it should have been. But I always remembered the last cow out in the herd getting bred by 16 black Angus bulls. And all the hides tore off her butt, and she's down in the ditch and being mauled, and she ends up bred. So easy handling is obviously the best, but trust me, you can, if your facilities aren't the best, you can still get it done and get conception rate. And like I say, there's so many good people out there to help you get started. So it's a little frightening at first, but it's actually very easy.
Well, I guess, my slant on it, or my deal is more towards the purebred. Of course, I've been to Herb's place, and that was probably 20 years ago, and he's right. His facilities weren't too good back then. It was a little dark wood box built in the corner of a shed, pretty much, with a door at the side, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. And, as far as my work and the embryo program and it is a little more specialized than just sinking the cow. We sink a lot of cows. We do synchronize breed all of our cows, the AI cows we do have and the heifers and I think Herb's right. I think all that's very obtainable with just a little bit of effort. Knowledge gained, you can get into it, and I do believe that the right facilities will go a long way to keep your people healthy and happy, and that you can do that. Embryo-wise, there's a lot of embryo technicians out there that can do the work. You're just going to have to be a little more diligent, put a little more time in on making the recip thing and everything work out right. It is very critical timing, and it's very critical to detail if you want a preg rate that you're going to be happy with. Otherwise, anybody can do it. It's just you won't turn out too good.
This question's for Doug. Here, Alison. Two questions for you. Are you using cloning at all in your program? And I'll ask the second question after that.
I'll answer that one first. Many years ago, I think University of Georgia did some of the first beef clones. We did some of the first beef clones with them. It's quite a few years ago. I can't remember now how long ago that was. We utilized it, tried to use it again a little later on. And really right now today in our world with the DNA and the movement or the speed of the movement at the front of the breed, I really think on our end, cloning is not viable. We're past those cattle before the time I could reproduce them again and get them in production again. We've left them behind. We've replaced them with younger stock. On the other hand, I think the cloning industry has grown in the club calf world, basically, and in that sphere of things, there's quite a bit of money in that, and those people are the ones doing most of the cloning for what I can take today.
And I'd like to follow up. You mentioned you were trying to balance matings based on the strengths of the female and the strengths of the male and make specific matings. Are you doing that all in your brain, or do you have a computer program that helps you with mate allocation?
Yeah, we have a homewritten computer program. You can get one through a couple of various ways, but the one for easiest to make individual matings and not group matings and things like that is actually just a handwritten home program. It's not that difficult. The difficult thing was to bleed the DNA into it because we are doing it on the numbers standpoint to start with. It's very easy. The DNA is in the EPDs, and that is the most acceptable, I think, the most generally used and the right way to use it. But what I found out, we were one of the original herds to do a DNA test for a DNA pool for Pfizer. Used to be Pfizer, Zoetis now. Back then it was Pfizer. And being one of the base herds, we got the raw information back when we did those whole herd tests. Because it was in the first 5,000 animals that they collected data on, which was mostly all the stud bulls from all the studs. They had samples that they could use. And then our herd, a few other herds. And I found that there was more variation in the top 1% than there was from 1 to 20%. So that was nice about having the raw data back, had it for a few years before the Angus Association picked it up and put it in, struck a deal with them to put it into the EPDs. And then the raw data went away. You can't sort the raw data. They won't give you the raw data. So we no longer know that. Now it's 1% to 99%, 1 to 100 percentiles, with the lowest being the best as far as Zoetis is concerned on their test. So I still look at both, and the reason I look at both is because association does not move the number all the way to where the DNA says it will be. In other words, my goal was to buy a light birth weight bull, and the bull's birth weight was 1.7, let's say, and his DNA said that he should be by percentage should be a 2.5, let's say, or by percentage they should be 0. Then with the DNA score down below the EPD, like in my book, I would pick the one that said DNA says the bull will move to a 0 someday, maybe. But the combination of his parents and the records association have and the DNA together right today gives him a 1.7. That's a vast improvement over what we used to have, and where the bull could probably go from a 0 to a 4 up and down all over the place, because somebody might mate a cow that's very high birth to a bull that's very low birth, and without a DNA test, you really don't know what was inherited by that individual. So I like to look at both. I don't sit here and tell everybody they should. If they just want to generally to pick bulls, the DPD is the best all-around information. If you want to look behind the scenes a little more than trying to combine both numbers to make sure a little added security that you are moving the direction you want to move.
Okay, give Doug a workout. It was brought out this morning that there was an optimum time to breed these donor cows for maximum embryo viability. Have you found that to be true, or do you use multiple breedings in these cows?
Bill, we use multiple breedings, and so we would start, and obviously, you know, cows ovulate at different times, and we see that by the age of the eggs and from when we started putting semen into when we quit. And we've actually missed cows all the way before, come back around and started before we were ever supposed to start to, and bred longer than we were ever supposed to on that cow to find out the next time we did her where she might land. And then I believe you really need to flush a cow at least three times to get a track record on her. I think the first time is a generalized dose, a generalized experiment to kind of see where the cow will go. And then adjust afterwards. But we breed our normal protocol. We breed at zero, one straw. We'll go out to basically 12 hours. We don't mind stretching that to 13 or 14, somewhere right in there, 12 to 14, and two straws. And then come back and breed one straw again. So we'll use four straws of semen, 1, 2, 1. If the cow gives us a track record that she's way early. I bred cow before she's using heat before to get embryos out of her, which makes no sense. It's just what she did when she showed what she showed. But that doesn't happen very often. That's one cow out of 30 years of doing it here. Did it before I came here, too. So it doesn't happen very often. But that's what we do. 1, 2, 1. Find most of the cows will produce 6.5 day stage 4, stage 5 embryos with that.
This question is for Herb. You mentioned something about that when that cow went down the alleyway in the chute and was AI'd, if she doesn't get pregnant, she goes down the road?
That's correct. We AI one time on, we have done cows twice at the ranch in Oregon. Here we do one heat, and then I wait 3 weeks and turn in some cleanup bulls, and then we ultrasound. I give them another 3 weeks. Or 30 days, and then we ultrasound to determine which ones were red AI and which ones are natural service. Then all the natural service cows go into the coal pen. I don't sell them then. I sell them later as bred cows in the summer this time of year prior to calving. But,
okay.
But they all, and the interesting thing is, as I've selected for reproductive fertility on all my females, my conception rates have gone the last 2 years. In fact, the guy that ultrasounds is in this room, but we're running between 83% and 86% on those on that cow herd now with one straw service.
Okay. And so you're raising replacements to take the place of the ones that you're gonna
Yes,
cull.
yes. I breed a lot of heifers. I figure I'm gonna lose about 15% or 20% of my cows a year due to age or being open. And then I take the open cows because I want to sell my cows that I sell to have a very short calving interval too, which makes them worth more money. Then I take the remainder of those open cows and I put embryos in them.
Okay. Doug, I had a question for you also. Did you, and I might have misunderstood you, did you say you're flushing donors every 21 days?
Yeah, through the spring season, starting with January calves, we'll go every 21 days. And which means you usually end up with a 1st of January date and then a later January date and then a mid-February date. And so we do that. We use 5 rounds in the spring. That stretched a little far. We'd probably rather do 4, but right now we're at 5. In the fall, depending on the year, I've only done twice at the most, usually one time in the fall, putting in fresh embryos, but we flush more than that. We do try not to flush. We're doing a flush right now as we speak. They're breeding donors, so we'll be doing that. But I have a bull sale in September and a female sale in October. We try to take that time off. So we're not one more thing. We only have a few people, so we can't do everything. But we'll get back to it in November. We'll actually implant the cows before the female sale ends to start the next flush. And then we'll start again. So we roughly have 2.5 months at the most out of the year that we're not flushing cows. But the 21-day interval is really for the spring set. And we can alternate it when we're just freezing them. It's not as important to us. But when we're doing that, we can reuse the natural heats and the recips back on top of the very next time. And then we ultrasound at 28 days. We use an ultrasound machine. We preg check. I have a vet that's very good at calling them. She's dead on it. And we ultrasound them at 28 days, and if we didn't see a heat out of them and they're not pregnant, we throw them back into the next round. But some of those cows, a certain percentage, about a third of them that aren't going to be pregnant, will show us that heat at 21 days, and which there will be a certain percentage, probably a third of them or a little less, is they're probably having an early embryonic death, and we're going to preg check them at. And then there's about a third that we just don't show us the heat, but didn't probably start to even take either. So that's how we work it.
One more question for Doug, or not one more, but again, what's your take on in vitro, if you've used it at all, and just your take on in vitro?
Yeah, we started back with in vitro. Leachman last cow. I don't know how long ago that is, Phil. It's been a while. I have to think about that. More than 15 years ago, we did the first IVF calves at Vintage. Early on in that technology, we tried that technology. Over the years, I've used it a little bit here and there, mainly for problem cows. We have tried virgin heifers. I have had just fine experience with that and a poor experience with that. I've had females over the years, had a few, and it's few too many because they're usually very expensive females. At a young age, never breed after I IVF'd them. You know, I've never had one bleed out, but you can have them bleed out. After the process, they can just die. From internal bleeding. It's a risk. I mean, it doesn't happen very often, but it's out there and it's a risk. Sometimes I've had individuals at a center shot multiple times with FSH to help them along in the IVF, especially this has only happened in heifers. And with this small dosage, and they say this is not possible, and they tell me it's not possible, but it keeps happening to me, is that I'll come back later on to flush that cow as a mature cow, and I'll send her into shock and drop her. I've never lost one yet, but I've had them down, you know, within minutes, needed an IV in their neck, or they're going to be dead. So I think that synthesizing of the ovaries, seeing that drug in small amounts early on in life, set them up for that reaction later on. So there's a whole array in the IVF gamut of what's going to happen. These young, very young females, there's a lot of progress to be made, but there's a lot of hidden costs So the hidden costs have to be paid attention to. And the hidden costs are these, what happens when you lose one of the most valuable young females you have. She won't breed, she won't do this. Those all have to be taken into consideration. The tool is very good. I use it today. I use it right now on cows that I can't get anything out of any other way. I know a lot of people that use it in young females and swear by it, and I've done it myself. Whether I swear by it, obviously, you can tell I don't. I have misgivings, but I run the ranch, and sometimes the goals of the ranch are not exactly the same as my goals. So sometimes I yield to the pressure of making progress.
My question would be for all three of you. How much use have you guys used with sex semen in the different operations, whether it's AI or embryo transfer? And then also, what type of differences have you seen in conception rates versus conventional?
I've never used it.
I'll just respond to, you know, our dairy program. And, of course, in the Jerseys, it works very well with the cows and the heifers. In the Holsteins, they, of course, use it on heifers. Cows, very, very limited. They really have a reproduction problem and will not respond to the sex semen. So, again, it really is a trick on the Jerseys.
Yeah, I've used sex semen in a couple of different ways. One of the ways I did is that a guy could sell more bulls than I could females, and all the retained heifers, virgin heifers on the ranch, were first AI was always to sex semen. And AI rates were lower, and I'd have to come back and use regular semen on the second AI and then kick them out with the bulls. But it was a good way to control my herd size using a product, getting what I wanted out of it, I could any female I was selling, I just breed regular semen because I didn't want to be, you know, controlling what my customer was going to get for offspring. But any retained female, I was doing that with them. I've given it up a little bit because it's hard to find bulls that you actually want to use, that they actually have sex semen on. They've listed them in the catalog that they have it, and usually sold out of it. And usually it's heifer semen on bulls that they don't want bulls out of. And so I wanted the other. I wanted the bulls, not the heifers. And usually the bull sires would use to produce bulls were selling enough semen without sex in it, so they weren't going to go to the cost of that. So, you know, they're using it as a tool to sell semen that they know really couldn't sell at a high price or a good price, and I was trying to use it as a control mechanism, which I think is a good one. You're going to take a little less conception rate because the semen is damaged a little bit doing it. But if you run in a good AI program, you'll get by. And then once you flip a regular AI on top of it, 3/4 of your calves are going to be, or more, are going to be bulls or whatever sex you choose. And not give up too much time. If you're not, I breed all my heifers, no matter their age, at the same time. So I don't split them up. If they're January, my ET program runs January to April. If they're January, they're April. They're all getting bred the first time for a January calf. And that April's going to have to calve in January and make it.
I probably need to add a little bit on the bulls that we're targeting, the limousine bulls. We're not using sex semen on them, mainly because we're targeting low-end cows that are problem breeders already. So we do not want to jeopardize any conception rate problems with them. And then also we're trying to offer the semen at reduced price. And so the dairymen are very cost conscious, and they're not going to pay much money for semen.
I have a question. I'm over here. This is for the whole panel. I'm wondering, First, I'd like to say thank you for your work and leadership with the cattle industry. And I'm wondering if you've had the opportunity to answer to either consumer groups or to packing plants about the use of reproductive technologies at all. Has that been a question that's ever come up? And if it has, can you maybe share with us how best to answer those kinds of questions?
Maybe repeat that again, please.
My question is the microphone working fine? Is this better? Okay, I'm sorry. My question is, have any of you had the opportunity to answer questions from either packing plants or from consumer groups about the use of reproductive technology in your product? I sense that at times maybe that might come up with regards to antibiotics or hormones. I'm wondering if that happens with you, and if it has, maybe you could share with us a success story.
I think the only time it comes up is when you're, keep in mind most of these programs like NHTC, Natural, GAP, et cetera, and even GAP, which is the most aggressive program on humane handling of livestock. Artificial insemination is completely okay, and what the consumer's main concern about is the progeny, and that all the cattle are handled properly all the time. So, and I have worked and received all the above audits over time, and it's not an issue. It would only be an issue if you were taking heifers that had been synchronized or something and put them into beef. They would not qualify for a lot of those programs.
Yeah, being a purebred guy, I really don't have any experience with people asking me those questions about our cattle farm. We don't implant anything. We do run a small commercial set of cows, about 100 head, and feed them ourselves all the way through. We don't do anything to those calves at all, but on that end. So maybe Mike would have more.
You know, I don't really have any experience with, you know, answering questions from the consumer groups or packer. I do think that we have to be very aware of course, withdrawal periods, of course. Any time we're going to give, you know, a synchronization, we have to make sure that we follow withdrawal periods and things like that. And then also injection sites, I think we have to be concerned about that, where we give the injections. That would be a concern with the packer. As far as the hormones, you know, again, I think that, again, we're using it. Pretty much a natural hormone that, you know, is we're just manipulating the hormone system of the cow. So I think we could sure justify that. Of course, I'm sure that there would be some scrutiny. But again, I think that we're trying to improve, you know, beef production. We're trying to you know, capture, you know, a way to make, you know, meat cheaper so everybody can afford it. I think that's something we have to be, you know, be very aware of, that we have to try to improve our technology. And I think that's, again, we have to stress that to the consumer.
And we are at our scheduled Clinton time. I really want to thank the panel, Dr. Mike Hall, Doug Worthington, and Herb Holzapfel. We know you're busy folks, and we appreciate you coming down and giving us your time.